I'm Sonia Morton Firth, and you're watching The Sonia Morton Firth Show. Today, my guest is James Roberts. James was born with a disability, meaning he hasn't got the use of his left leg. But he didn't let this stop him in his dreams to become an athlete. James represented Great Britain in swimming in 2003, and then as a rower, he competed in 2008 in the Paralympic Games in Beijing. In 2012, he was part of the volleyball team in the London Paralympics and reached the quarterfinals. Now James is a personal trainer and helps other amputees push past their disabilities through mindset and helps them achieve their dreams. James, thank you so much for being a guest on my show. James, tell me about your journey to becoming an athlete and the sort of things that you had to overcome with your disabilities.
Well, I think mine's slightly different to the norm in terms of coming from an athlete background because I was brought up in Belgium with parents both in the military. So I think my upbringing within the realms of probably the ordinary lifestyle as an athlete is different from a Paralympic standpoint, not so much because there's more and more athletes who've had that kind of upbringing. But in terms of probably dealing with that adversity that you talk about, I probably didn't see it from that perspective because I'm probably coming from a background that's quite old school. It's kind of a methodology that is kind of a sink or swim mentality. So I never saw those occasions arising until probably later on, be it probably as a coach, because people will say, well, your situation growing up was quite adverse, but I was quite adaptable to the environment that I was put in. So it's okay, I know I have this disability.
Did you think you were different? Or when I say different, did you see yourself as disabled? Because it was something that you were born with.
Probably yes and no, but I think because obviously physically I could see that I'm different to everybody else, but it was having those peers and friends around me that had very much similar interests, you've got a relatable something to go from straight away. So for me, it was sport from the very get-go, so I had an in with people straight away. It's like, well, we've got a commonality, and probably because the disability was there, I know I had to make adjustments, adaptations, and be flexible too. I know I'm going to have to treat things and tread things lightly, but I think they accommodated within that too. We're not going to exclude you because you have that disability. We're going to try and be as inclusive as possible and try and keep you within that group of peers, really.
And were there any times, because you started off swimming, that's right, and then you went to rowing. Tell me about how you got into swimming and what that was like.
It was spur of the chance. I started off relatively late in swimming terms. I started at 11. And
wow, 11 is late. Yeah,
okay. For that sport, yeah. So normally they look to start swimmers 5, 6, 7 years old. Yeah. So in the relatability to that, I think it did spur me on when that problem had arisen and coaches say, well, you started late. It's like, well, I'm going to prove you wrong from that basis. But
so you wanted to prove them wrong.
Yeah. But coming back to your question, Sonia, in terms of how did I get into swimming, it was trying to find a sport where the disability wasn't a disadvantage, and that was from, be it my mother's perspective, looking at ways in which, well, you can't be taken advantage of, and your disabilities are less of a disadvantage. So it kind of fell into my lap, swimming, and kind of how it progressed. A coach approached me when I was about 15, 16. What is your thoughts about doing disability sport? And I'd never participated in disability. It was always able-bodied sport up until that point.
So you were competing against normal people with people without disabilities,
yeah,
up until that point. Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. So, and then it was your coach actually said to you, "Do you?" And how did that feel? When someone actually sort of pointed that out and said,
I wasn't angry, but I was taken back by the comment.
Okay.
But I was, well, I was a teenager anyway, so it's one way of rebelling to a certain extent. And I was, but I've been brought up to listen to And be it if you don't agree with that opinion, you still listen to it. So I took on board all that information, went home, spoke to my parents about it, and I spoke to them not too long about it. They actually said, well, they were actually more infuriated than I was. But I was willing to, once I probably come off that high step and thought about it and thought about it a little bit more rationally, it's like, well, it doesn't, it's not in the media spotlight. Okay, it's only the early 2000s as we're talking about it. However, okay, if it gives me an avenue to progress in sport, why not? And kind of it kind of snowballed from there. And I think within the space of, I think about 6 to 12 months, I was in a national program. So it kind of did escalate very, very quickly.
And how did your... presumably there were physical issues that you had to overcome, but in terms of your mindset and where you were, how did that help you?
I think the disability has been a godsend, because it was a Facebook group posted, I think about 3 months ago, what are you thankful for your disability? And I thought, I kind of put, well, I come from a different perspective on this, because theirs were very normal responses. I kind of put it out there. I know it's...
What are normal responses, just so...
I guess to be... I think because people have either traumatic experiences, be it cancer, accidents and things like that, they're thankful for they've got a new start in life.
Yes.
Whereas for me, if it hadn't been... And I was very critical at different stages of my life, as well, I wanted anything but having a disability. Or I kind of flipped it on his head and said, well, if it hadn't been for having a disability, yes, I haven't had my sporting career.
Absolutely. So you've actually turned it around to be a benefit, mm-hmm, a positive, mm-hmm, thing for you. So after the volleyball, the Olympics, you were in the 2012 London Paralympics. After that stage, what happened? Did you continue with the sport, or...?
Well, I tried to continue with the sport, and I stayed with volleyball until about 2013, and obviously financial reasons, funding, all that, being based the other end of the country in North Wales, and predominantly the big makeup of the team being in London, it didn't work. So I kind of went, well, we'll have to call time on sport and kind of go a different route in terms of that. I did try and do another transition to another sport. That probably didn't work out, and that probably had a dampener and probably jolted my ego.
So you mentioned that you entered a dark side, mm-hmm, a depression. Tell me about that. When did that happen?
I think, and I've reflected on this, Sonia, and look back and go, I blamed it as being the last 12 to 18 months, and I think as I've reflected on that, it's probably started long before that, and it's been little things building up under the surface, not really deal with them at the time, and it's been probably, I've put it as, okay, the last 12 to 18 months is probably the last push, pushing me over the cliff in terms of dealing with the mental health. And I think it's probably started I had a phone call from my rowing coach when I'd made that transition over to volleyball, and he'd said, oh, one of your teammates committed suicide. And I think...
One of your teammates,
yeah.
Okay.
And it was it was a bit shockful, and thinking, well...
Yeah, I'm not surprised. One of your teammates that you've presumably you've known for a long time and you've worked, mm-hmm, together. Mm-hmm. And why did they commit suicide?
I don't know why they did it, but I guess, well, everybody's got their hardship with the disability, but why they would resort to that, I don't know, but it was, I think, with me, probably big, because you're used to living in each other's pockets day in, day out, and maybe that relationship that I had with him, I put as no big deal, because you're gonna have friction at times, because we've been so close to each other day in, day out, you're gonna have your good days, you're gonna have your bad days, and I thought maybe, oh, well, it's a professional relationship, and maybe it was deeper than that. And, well, I think as human beings, that connection you have with people, I thought it as no big deal. And I guess you never really do come to terms with bereavement until that actually happens. I think with having family members, that everybody knows that's going to happen. But I think sport, you don't think people being from a sense of probably that illusion sportsmen give off, everything's rosy, very positive, you wouldn't think that they would resort to something like that.
So you'd sort of hit this high time in your life when you're very successful, and then you're suddenly told that one of your teammates died. What happened to you in that? I mean, did that affect your own mental health?
Not at that time. I probably brushed it under the carpet and it's like, well, I'll deal with this when I retire. And I think that was probably the bad decision. I probably should have reached out to other members of that team and said, well, how does this make you feel? And be it come back to probably dealing with my own bereavement in my family, I dealt with it for a little bit, but did I really...
You didn't talk to anybody about it?
I probably to a certain extent still do, but I internalise a lot of things and be it while deal with myself. And I think that's probably the wrong way about going about things. And I think as I've dealt with mental health probably the last 12 months, I've gone away from that. I was like, well, it's a problem. There's nothing wrong with the stigma of speaking out about it. So that's probably where I probably should have taken a leaf out of my own cap from me being older and done it. Well, this would have been about 10 years ago and it wouldn't have probably spiraled out of control.
So tell me about the last 12 months.
It's been relatively difficult because you're thinking, I've been very, very positive, had that success. I've always had it easy mentally speaking. It's trying to get that 1%, and I think because things have maybe not gone my way, and I've probably resorted to, like most people in the world, it's playing the victim and then passing the buck and say, well, it's not my fault, it's somebody else's. And I think this is probably where I've gone wrong, because as an athlete, yes, I did it to some degree, but I still held myself accountable. So it was looking to implement strategies for speaking to people within the mental health sector and kind of going, well, where do you want to go in the future in terms of, okay, this now is a problem, but what was the driving force behind you as an athlete, and what resources do you want to kind of implement going forward? So it was a learning curve, and probably reinventing myself and refining the things that I did well.
And now, where you are now in yourself, what do you do now when you have those sort of low points, or if you have times when you're feeling like you just want to give up?
Well, it's taking that step back and saying, is that situation such big deal? B, is it an emotional response to, have I had my feelings hurt? Is it an emotional response to being scared, angry, and take that aspect, but is it as big a deal as I'm making out to be? And look at it in the bigger picture, whereas I think myself and other people, you get so narrowly focused and you blow things way out of proportion than they actually are. And I think that can be quite dangerous, because you start thinking all about me.
You spiral, the negative talk gets inside your head, right? And you end up spiraling into an even darker place. So today you help other people with disabilities, and you're a personal trainer. Tell me about that. How do you help them in terms of their own mental? Obviously you've got the physical sides of their disabilities, but in terms of the mental side, how do you help them?
It's probably getting them to question the things, be it like you talked about, the perceptions, the thoughts that they may have. And a lot of these things do happen subconsciously, because it's built up over a long period of time, be it their own bias, their own miss towards certain things.
And is it usually around the disability that you find?
Not necessarily. Some will be towards the disability, be it this perception that I can't achieve what I was able to achieve as an able-bodied person. It's like, well...
And how do you counteract that? Because I guess if someone is sitting there and say, well, I can't do that because I don't have the use of my arm or the, mm-hmm. my leg or whatever it is. How do you counteract that? Because I guess that's a fact. They can't use their arm or their leg.
Well, it's well, when you talk about I can't, obviously, if you start thinking so negatively, it's kind of a manifestation. It's gonna happen. You believe you can't do something, it won't happen. Whereas, well, I get to question you, well, why can't you? And kind of probe deeper as, is it built on somebody else's ideology in terms of saying, it could be even PE related back in the day. Well, I have this perception because you have this disability, you can't do that. And obviously that drummed into you day in, day out. You're going to believe it. So it is trying to dispel those myths and get them to question, obviously, their inner beliefs, be it their own or somebody that has given them to them, and kind of question, well, do you truly believe it? What is that, what's built in your subconscious?
Absolutely. So you get really down to the subconscious mm-hmm. level and try and change that, turn that around. That's fantastic. And in terms of going down into that sort of subconscious level and sort of changing that, what sort of effects have you seen with your own clients?
Well, it's in terms of, I think they change for the better, be it some will be, from a physical standpoint, will be very driven in terms of, I want it now, I want to go 100 miles now. Mm. And then when you say to them, well, you get some better results just by backing off occasionally and just by them giving you the kudos in terms of, well, thank you for saying, take that, my foot off the accelerator and take a step back. Not necessarily putting the brakes on, but taking and listening to your body and knowing what's best, because me telling you to, well, you need to work hard here, take a break here, until you actually implement that and action it and see it for yourself, you won't know what the implications are going to have on your life going forward. So I think from that basis, Sonia, I think it's been great to have the, how would I word it, the thanks for just being open-minded and looking to using some common sense, really. Sometimes it's not, I think people look to make things more difficult than they need to be sometimes, and I'm the same at times. It's those little percentages can make a massive difference, but I think because you think it's so easy, it's got to be harder than that. But I think by implementing those little small things, they make a massive impact.
Do you think society's view on people that have got disabilities help perpetuate that I can't do something?
I think it's got better, and I think obviously having the games in London in 2012 has pushed that perception of disability forward. I think there's still some scope to keep going with that,
but completely,
I think it depends on which side of the fence you fall. There is that argument where, okay, Channel 4 did their best with obviously portraying Paralympics as superhuman. I was okay with that back then, whereas now I'm thinking, well, we talked about it off air in terms of putting athletes on a pedestal. Well, how can a normal person that per se doesn't like sport will never go down that route, how can they relate to somebody?
But they've still got the disability.
They've still got that disability. Mm. So that misconception within society, or you have a disability, or newfound identity, as I would put it, why don't you go into the Paralympics? And you've not got to know that individual. You're setting them up to fail straight away, because they never want to go down that avenue whatsoever.
Of course, yeah. So it's finding out what the individual, mm-hmm. what the true values mm-hmm. of the individual are, regardless, I guess, of the disability. And in terms of what you want to say to people out there, I guess, with disabilities, is that, and if they're going through a dark patch mm-hmm. or low moments, is there anything that you would say to help them sort of get out of those situations?
Always light. It's cliche, but there's always light at the end of the tunnel. It's those dark times can actually help you, because there's a saying that, obviously, you're either running away from things you don't like or looking to walk towards something that you do like. Or what's wrong with actually going towards something that's bad? It's gonna hurt,
yeah,
but you're gonna overcome it a little bit more quickly and actually comprehend and be a little bit more alert. I did what would be the opposite of that. I looked to find the easy way out in terms of having to deal with it. I think, but until you come to terms and accept the difficult position you're in, you're never going to get out of it well and truly.
And accepting, mm-hmm. Is there something to help you accept where you are? Is there something that helped you accept what they
are? Well, I think you could probably generalize it to everybody. Until you come to accept you as being you, you're always going to be steered in one way or a direction or another because you're trying to reach somebody else's idea of yourself. And you're always going to be set up to fail because if you're trying to aspire to what somebody else's outlook they have on you, well, are you really ever going to truly accept yourself? So I think in terms of the acceptance point of view, it starts with you. It's loving yourself. And I think this perception...
I like that. Loving yourself. That's what it does come down to.
This perception of going against that, and I think that's where we are in society, you shouldn't care what somebody thinks about you. And I think...
We all compare, don't we? Social media, everything's made us constantly mm-hmm. compare. Mm-hmm. So it's taking that you can't compare anything, you just got to compare yourself against mm-hmm. yourself. James, in terms of the future, what does your future hold for you? Where do you see yourself in a few years' time?
I don't like that kind of question, but...
Why don't you like that kind of question? Well, that's actually quite interesting because you don't look forward or you're not looking into the future.
Well, you could look at it from two perspectives on that. It's... You can't control, obviously, what the future is to come. However, and this is probably something I've learned and come to accept from more recently, well, that is a negative way of thinking in terms of you can't control it, but why have this perception of being scared, anxious of what is to come? Why not go with it? And kind of a mentality I had as an athlete, have that, be excited as to what's to come,
yeah,
and be
absolutely.
A little bit more open-minded. In terms of answering your question more specifically, I think the sky's the limit. It's networking, doing more things like this, and you never know what's going to come
out of
it.
Helping more people out there that come from this.
Well, it does come to that. It's trying to be able to reach as many people as you can, and obviously it's having that paying it forward mentality is... You might help one person, you might help 10 people, and it kind of magnifies from there. And it's kind of a ripple effect.
So on that note, where can people find out more about you?
You can find me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, on the handle at JamesO.Roberts11.
Great, and that'll be in the show notes. We'll put those in the show notes.
I've got my own podcast called the Mindset Athlete Podcast.
Mindset Athlete. That sounds fantastic. And James, my last question. If you were to put a message in a bottle for future generations to find, what would that message be?
I would say, on kind of encapsulating what we've talked about today, it's probably coming to accept yourself as you, and kind of, you're always gonna get your haters. It's kind of using that as fuel for the fire. It's like not having a care in what they think at the end of the day. You've got to live with your regrets and the positives, and at the end of the day, the only critic should be you.
Fantastic. James, thank you so much for being a guest on my show.
Oh, it's been my
amazing.
Pleasure.
Thank you. Hope you enjoyed the show. Remember, there's a new interview out every Monday, so hit subscribe and like, and you'll get it straight into your inbox.